You're listening to Back to the Light with J.D. Rieger. Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Back to the Light, coming to you live on tape. I am your host, J.D. Rieger. No plugs this week, I need a break. Both of my guests for this episode, the gun show Brett Michaels and Dustin Heath, aka DNA and Maurice the Strong, were recorded on location at the Wrestle Center. Thank you to Dustin Starr and Memphis Wrestling for giving us the access. First, Brett Michaels quickly tells me about working on the NBC TV show Young Rock and the Memphis Wrestling Trios tournament. Then Dustin, Heath, and I take a deeper dive into his wrestling career, his finishing move, his inspirational podcast, Duddy's Your Buddy, Working for Control Your Narrative, the whole thing. And in addition to that, we get an unexpected cameo of sorts from the one and only Jimmy Blaylock. You'll just have to hear it. And with that, let's start the show. All right, well, I'm here with the gun show, Brett Michaels. Thank you so much for joining me. I know you got to get to your match in a second, so we'll just be real quick.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. I don't mind. I like doing this as many times as I had to. I'll do it every time if you need me to.
Well, you've been posting lots of pictures and stuff on the set of Young Rock, so that's what I got to ask you about, man. How has that been?
It's been a pretty awesome experience. So far, as of now, we've shot three episodes here in Memphis, and I'm on two of the three episodes. The first episode airs November the 4th, and then each Friday after that, new episode airs. I'm on the first one and the second one. You'll recognize me on the first, but the second one, I'm on there, you just won't recognize me at all.
Are you portraying a specific wrestler?
I am. I really am. We'll just say pay close attention to when The Rock joins the Nation of Domination.
So you're getting into even the later years, the outside of Memphis years.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the fun stuff. Yeah. So both episodes, I'm a WWE wrestler, or actually I guess WWF at that time. So,
sure.
Yeah. So they're all of my stuff's portrayed somewhere around 97 area. So yeah, anytime right in there, except like I said, the first episode, I'm there, right there in the camera. They know it's gonna be me, but the second episode, you gotta look hard. You won't recognize me. I mean, there might be some extra stuff on my head and my face, and I definitely won't be wearing the normal stuff that I would be wearing. That's for sure.
I gotcha. But you're filming stuff like in-ring stuff.
Yes.
How is shooting a match for television different than having a match?
Oh my God. To the actors, they're just they're amazed, because when somebody gives us we call it the small stuff to do, because, we're used to doing eight minute matches, 10 minute matches, 15, 20 minutes. But then here, they're like, hey, this is your scenario. It's literally, technically, by the time it gets to video, it might be 5 seconds. But it's like, when you do this, this, and this, and work into this, and we're like, oh, okay. And then the actors are like, man, y'all caught on real quick. It was like, you just don't understand. That's easy for us, because that's all we got to do. Hey, we can do that, because we're used to doing way much more than that. So,
how good are these actors in the ring? Could some of these guys come in here today and have a match?
I'm going to go ahead and say that it really surprised me. I mean, they catch on real good about it, but they're just like iffy, because they think it's out of their comfort zone, where the stuff we're doing is acting on this show, so that's out of our comfort zone. So where their comfort there, we're uncomfortable. And then vice versa, in the wrestling scenes, they're the ones that's nervous and stuff, and we're just ready to go. We're ready to do it. So,
are you doing acting too?
So far, my scenes are pretty much wrestling scenes. So right now, the only thing I've done, and then I've done some stand-in stuff off camera, and pretty much anytime they've said, hey, are you available? I learned to say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
A whole lot more than I have in 20 years, that's for sure.
Well, what is it like on the set of a major TV show like that? I know that's a big question.
It's really mind-blowing. I mean, if you've ever heard the term, hurry up and wait, this is definitely the major, I mean, that's exactly how it is. Hurry up and wait.
Man, me and Dust at DNA just had a huge, you know, 10-minute conversation about hurry up and wait.
Oh, I'm telling you, I've always been, like, a patient person. In this place, if you was, like, you know, you had to be constantly doing something, blah, 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 you wouldn't be able to do it because it's a lot of sitting around, like, and then a lot of redoing. There's a lot of redo because, like, you might have shot the scene perfect the first time, but it's just, hey, let's do it a different way. Let's do it again a different angle. Let's do it like 10 times, and then they'll be like, okay, swap camera angles. We're going to do it 10 more times. So it's a lot of repetitive stuff. It's definitely been a heck of an experience. And anybody that has an option of getting a choice to do some of this, whether you're a fan on the show or get a chance to be a referee and do one of the scenes and stuff, I would definitely recommend to do it because it's fun. I'm going to tell you that. It's been fun. It's kept me busy, a lot more busy than I have been doing anything else also. So they're paying the bills right now. So, I mean.
Well, it sounds like a sweet gig. Before I let you go, what are you up to today at the Wrestle Center, or what can you tell me?
Today we're in a bit of a pickle. Me and my partner, Big Swole, we're in the Trios tournament, but the guy that was supposed to be our partner had something come up and he couldn't make it. So now we're in trouble. We got to find somebody, or, you know, it's kind of hard to do a Trios tournament if there's only two of you.
Yeah.
When that's what it's all about, is three-man team, so. We got to do something.
Well, I think
we got to make some calls or something.
I have faith that you'll figure something out.
We've got a couple of ideas, and
not a lot of people say no to the gun show.
If any of the ideas work, we're going to be just as amazed as you guys are. So.
Well, I know you got to get to it, so thanks a lot for the time.
I appreciate it. I'll do it anytime you need me, man. Anytime you want me to come in, I'm good.
Awesome. Yeah, sometime I've said
this before.
We got
to do that sit down. We got to do the sit down.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's all kind of stuff we can talk about.
Yeah, man.
I'll keep y'all busy for a long time.
Yeah, man. I've started watching a lot of EPW recently,
okay,
too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot I'd want to get into.
Oh, yeah. That's something on its own. And it's just as fun as Memphis is. And like I say, they're all keeping me busy. I'm getting booked everywhere else just because of these two shows. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure Young Rock's going to make that even better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. November the 4th on NBC, Young Rock premieres. Make sure you catch that first episode for sure because, you know, my booking fee will go up after that.
Well, I'm glad I got you before then.
Yeah, yeah, you're good right now. So after that, though, we might have to negotiate
might have to
some
talk.
Stuff. Yeah.
Well, all right, man. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it, man. I enjoyed doing it, man.
I'm here with my friend Dustin Heath.
Hello.
A.K.A. DNA, A.K.A. Maurice the Strong.
Indeed. Man of many talents, but master of none.
Well, first things first, I was kind of impressed last time I saw you in action. You did a move that you invented, the jump over DDT thing.
Yes.
I want to know about how did you come up with that thing?
Oh, how did I come up with that? Well, initially it was called the six cylinder. I don't know why I came up with that name. I think it was because I was trying to think of a cool name. Because my initial wrestling name, back when I was a teenager, when I started in the business, was Phoenix. I kept coming up with all these things like, yeah, I know you're looking at me like, what, Phoenix?
Phoenix, like the mythological character, not
yeah,
the city.
Right, like the creature that rose from the ashes.
Sure.
And I was always, so we came up with a six cylinder, I don't know why, because I was trying to think of, like, you know, names for it. And someone just said that and it clicked. I was like, well, I don't see, you know, this is, of course, the time of the Attitude Era, ECW, WCW's all on TV at once. And, of course, everything's being used. And I'm like, well, you know, you have the stunner, you have the rock bottom, and then
you can't just call it a regular wrestling move.
Yeah, you just can't call it the cool DDT thing. And I think what happened was I was driving with a buddy in my car, and I had this little crappy 4-speed Honda Civic, and I was like, man, I wish I had a 6-cylinder. or I wish I had a six-cylinder or something like that. And he's like, that's the name of it. That's the name of it. But how I came up with the idea of the DDT was literally, you remember Taz, right? From
each sure,
movie?
Sure.
The human suplexing machine.
Yes.
And I remember...
Father of Hook.
Yes. And I remember him just taking something as simple as a suplex and hitting it from various angles... in ways, and it was devastating because even though he wasn't the biggest guy, he would come out and he was intimidating. Remember, Taz is gonna kill you. And I just always thought like DDTs were so devastating, and how it was invented was, of course, by accident, and it really knocked somebody out and they really got hurt. And I watched a guy in high school literally cinch up a guy and give him a DDT in the gym floor and knock him out, and I was like, whoa. And it looked horrible, like, cause it was horrible, but it looked, oh my God, this poor person. And I was like, well, if Taz can do this, be devastating with suplex, something as simple as suplex, I'm going to do DDTs. Every DDT had been done, man, like the double underhook, double arm DDT where they swing around almost like a discus style and plant you. The almost suplex style DDT, I think they called it an impaler. And everything had been done. And I was like, well, how can I make it cool? And I remember thinking, like, I was too big to be like a cruiserweight kind of guy, but I was too small to be a big guy. And I was like, well, what about this? And I did it, and I actually debuted it here at Memphis against Mr. Priest, who's actually here today.
It seems like that move would be pretty harmful to your body as well, because you have to do it, you know, jumping over someone.
Yeah, it's it took a lot of practice. It seems easy, but the timing and everything of how to jump, when I come down, when to, you know, give the signal, if you will. All of that is very, it took practice. It really did, especially when I was younger and more athletic and I had really high ups. There's times I'd go up and I'd be like, oh, did I miss the guy? Because I'm still coming down. And I wish I had footage, but this is way back before the internet was huge. This is probably 2000 and, oh, I'm going to say five-ish. I hit it so high, there was a pitcher, and I'm flat backed above the guy coming down, and there had to have been 5 feet between his back and my back. That's how high up I got on it.
Wow.
And yeah, it was awesome. And I could not tell you to this day where that picture went, because it'd be cool bragging rights, you know?
How do you get your body used to taking stuff like that over and over again? You told me before we started this that you just wrestled last night somewhere in Indiana.
I did.
You got thrown around.
I did.
And now you're about to do it again.
Yes.
How do you keep it up?
I tell people, well, conditioning helps, obviously. People don't realize how much cardio goes into wrestling. And, of course, lifting weights helps with the musculature and taking the bumps and working your neck and traps like I do a lot. But it's almost like I tell people, like, you go out and rake your yard right now, having not raked or done manual labor, you're going to get blisters on your hands. You do it again a couple days from now, and then a couple days after that, then more manual labor. Next thing you know, there's no more blisters. It's calluses.
Yeah, yeah. As a guitar player, I know them
oh,
well.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so you know better than most. So I remember my dad was a farmer. His hands were like granite, you know, from just all the manual labor. And that's kind of what your body is. You'll do it the first few times. There's bruising, and there's almost like you can't get out of bed. And then next thing you know, it's not so bad. It's a little less bad. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I can wrestle multiple times a week and be okay. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little sore today, but it was a battle royal where I took a lot of finishers, so.
I'm sure that the wrestling business is like the music business. When you're on tour, there's tons of travel, hurry up, and then you wait to perform. Like, you know, for a musician, it could be a 30-minute to an hour set. For you, it's a 5-minute to a 20-minute match, and then you're done. How do you feel the whole rest of the time?
I try to capitalize on a lot of things with that time. Obviously, like, if you look around here, there's a lot of wonderful people to meet, share stories, get to know people, make friends even, if not really good acquaintances, networking. And I'm kind of used to being in the military. Like, we always had the...
Someone's wheeling a casket through the room. That's something you don't see every day.
No, welcome to the Halloween show, ladies and gentlemen. and it's pretty well done. Someone made that, but
yeah.
Like, who works here? So it's actually really well done.
Who's going in that thing?
I don't know, to be honest.
No spoilers.
I don't know if anyone is or if someone is or not.
Sorry to derail you. That was just quite a sight.
It was okay. I'm sure they're hearing it now anyway on the recording. Where were we?
So we were talking about the just the travel schedule and how you filled the downtime.
Yeah, hurry up and wait. And I'm kind of used to it because being in the military, that was our motto, was actually hurry up and wait, because there'd be times you'd wait all day at the what we call the green ramp as we get on the airplane to jump out of it. And, you know, you'd wait there 13, 14 hours sometimes just to go up for a couple minutes, jump out, takes a couple minutes, and then you're done.
Yeah.
So hurry up and wait is kind of something I'm used to.
It's also the name of a Radiohead tour documentary.
Really?
Yeah. It's a music thing, too.
Yeah. And it's honestly, too, I like to look at it like with my podcast. We've talked about like a lot of things I go through on there, and Duddy's your buddy, shameful plug. And
no shame in plugging.
And one of the things to talk about is like embracing moments and times, because we're not going to be able to do this forever. You know, you may take a position being an agent or helping train people, or, and those are very rewarding, but the actual time of, hey, I'm an active professional wrestler. I mean, not everybody's going to be Ric Flair doing this when they're, how old is he now?
I was about to say, I'm wearing a Sting t-shirt right now.
Right.
This dude's still active at what, like 60 or something?
Yeah, and I think he have like even vertebrae issues, and it's crazy.
Could you imagine yourself jumping off of a tunnel or whatever, like the stuff that Sting still does doing at the age of 60 years old?
No.
I can't even imagine myself playing guitar on stage at that age.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, Steve Austin said it best, you know, when your music hits and you come out of the curtain, you might as well be a junkie. And there is something fun about it. And I, like last night, for instance, I had a very rewarding experience, even though it was a battle royal, where there was just new people in there. They're just training. And I was able to help them get some really good spots and give them confidence in the ring. And one guy was very new, and I helped him eliminate someone, so he got like a little bit of shine. And I was just going, okay, so ready to go. And I had no idea that his girlfriend and family were 10 rows away with a perfect bird's eye view. And I held up his hand like, yeah, look at him. And I threw him over the top rope, and they were livid. But he's a babyface and I'm a heel, so it kind of worked out. But I told his family afterwards, I'm like, just, you got to get used to it, because the bad guys are going to take advantage, you know.
Yeah.
And but it's a good learning experience just to pass it on. I'm big on passing on. When I started, there was so much hazing and driving people out of the business at young ages, because, I mean, you know, anybody can watch a WWE or whatever documentary and be like, oh, well, I started in the indies, the next thing I'm on TV. And that's a lot of people's expectations. And they go to a school, not like here. Here is very nice, very benign atmosphere. But you go to some places, and, I mean, it's like basic training. You're hazed out very quickly, and people get discouraged.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the stories you hear, you know, some of the old school guys tell on podcasts about the things they went through just to prove themselves, just to, you know, the taking beatings week after week just to, you know, finally, you know, maybe get paid. You know, it sounds even worse than the music business.
I can't relate to the music.
At least no one punches you in the face.
Yeah, I can't relate to the music business, but I do remember getting what they call smoked in basic training, which is when, you know, they're just screeching, screaming, and they're working people till they throw up and stuff.
Yeah.
And I did military after training for wrestling, and I remember very much being in basic training in the heat and being like, oh, this reminds me of wrestling training, because it was very similar. I had a guy who was military or former military is one of my trainers before I started training with like Tony and those guys, and he treated it just like that. I mean, doing what they call flutter kicks in the middle of the ring. I remember driving 2 hours, a college kid working 3 jobs. Luckily, gas was cheaper than it is now, and I had a little teeny car. I remember jumping in my little car and driving like 2-3 hours one way just to basically get smoked the entire time and maybe bump.
Damn.
Yeah.
You've mentioned doing your podcast a couple times, and we haven't actually talked about it on Back to the Light, so I want to share what that's about with the audience a little bit, because I think it lines up a little bit with what I'm about, frankly, and that's, you know, putting positive energy out there and,
right,
you know, encouraging people as much as you can.
Yeah, Duddy's your buddy. It's and the your is, I've had people complain it's you are, because I don't know why. It seemed clever at the time, like text talk, like you are. And I started it as I'm always trying to be a positive person, help people. And I always put other people before myself. And it got to a point where I'm like, but am I really doing enough? So what I decided to do, I think probably a year and a half ago now, I think I'm up to what, I think I did episode 69, I think, this past week.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And
that's a milestone. A lot of people say most podcasts don't even make it to episode 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, mine's only like 5 minutes long, so it probably makes it easy to do. But yeah, I did, I just started doing it, and I didn't know what I was doing. I literally went to Anchor. I heard that advertised on another podcast I listened to. And I went to Anchor, and I just started playing and butchering and re-recording and butchering some more, watching YouTube videos, because apparently I'm not bright enough to run Anchor as easy as it is now. And over and over again, and then I did one, and it was kind of not as positive as I'd like. So I did my second episode about a friend who I knew in high school. We still keep contact to this day, and we're both in our 30s. And he was, I always knew he was gay. And as we were, even when we were kids, and I thought everyone knew because I was so unpopular that no one ever talked to me. And I figured, well, I know, everybody knows. And he actually didn't come out until college, and which blew my mind when I come up, when I caught up with him. But I told the story about how I never gossiped about it. I was severely bullied, and I never jumped onto the bandwagon of, oh, look at that guy, and like making fun of him. He was always a friend to me, and we just. From there, I got so much positive feedback, and he actually listened to it, and he cried, and he was telling me about how much it meant to him that I actually put it out there, and how much it meant to him that he always had an ally in a very small, rednecky kind of school where I was actually taking beatings because people were threatening to beat him, wow. And I would try to... I even said in the episode I came at it with the standpoint of, you know, what would Batman do? He wouldn't let it happen. Because I was a nerd who had no friends, and I took a pretty severe beating so he wouldn't have to take it. And, yeah, it's just, and from there, just kind of little things I pick up on here and there where I see, like, maybe in media where, you know, just things are negative and how we can just make it positive. Like, hey, instead of the tribalism, let's all get along. And, you know, hey, instead of fighting about a mask, let's worry about ourselves and things like that. And it's just... It keeps you. I've been lucky enough and blessed enough to find something every week to talk about. So, and luckily it's only 5 minutes, so you can kind of get in and out real quick if you catch one. So,
do you ever get to a point? Because I admit that I sometimes struggle with this. I try to put the team first and put others first in all of my projects as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever reach a burnout point with that sometimes and start to think, why am I not getting the same love that I put out there back?
I think you'd have to be a cyborg not to, right? I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, and that's the way with, and it's that way with wrestling too. There's times, I mean, right before I actually started coming to Memphis and the Control Your Narrative thing happened, I remember waking up one day, the day of a show, being like, and I've never said anything like this, but being like, what's the point? Am I going to make it? Chances are probably not. Like, I mean, is this even worth it? And then I'll find a post of a guy that's like, I was 400 pounds and now I'm 150, or hey, no one said I could get sober and here I am. And I'm like, you know, and here I am crying about doing something I really enjoy doing, which potentially could have great payoffs in the long run. You know, basically, are we allowed to swear on here?
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, quit being a little bitch and get up and go to the show. And, of course, then the promoters are relying on you. It's like you're letting people down. And one of my favorite quotes is, being lazy is disrespectful to people who believe in you. And I got two kids, and it's like, what am I showing them if I'm like, yeah, dad's being a little bitch today. He's going to stay in bed, eat Cheetos, and cry, you know? And watch Star Wars again, you know?
You mentioned Control Your Narrative. What is the, now that Strowman is back with the big leagues, what does that mean for that organization? Do you know?
I do. It's still going. The big tour we were going to do this fall,
it got postponed, right?
I think it's for all intents and purposes canceled. And where we're at now is, I don't know the details of why. I'm assuming when he went back to WWE, they were basically like, hey, you got to have your eggs in one basket. And I'm sure the zeros on that check, they said, it's our basket. And he didn't blame him. He's 39 years old. I mean,
yeah.
And he's a beautiful human being. I got to know him fairly well and a great human. And you can't blame him for wanting a little bit of financial security going into his 40s. And So EC3 in Austin are still doing it. They actually have a School of Morton seminar coming up. I actually, if you forgive me, I have it right here. They actually are doing, they're doing seminars a lot lately, but they're going to start another tour, are going to shoot for another tour. And this Control Your Narrative seminar is Friday, November 18th at School of Morton in Chuckie, Tennessee. That's a Friday at 3 o'clock, and the price is $75. And seems, may seem like a lot, but the thing about those is you learn a lot, and they take their time to individually... You cut your own promos. They'll critique you if you can fit into what they're doing. They'll put you on the show, which that's huge. It's I think it was like $100 the one I did initially, AML versus Control Your Narrative, the show I was on. And I mean, I learned a lot, and I was lucky enough to get on that one and perform. And you know, all things pointed to it was leading to me potentially working with Braun as Maurice the strong man, you know, against a real strong man. All things were looking like it might end actually crescendo in that Indianapolis before he went back to. Yeah, it's kind of depressing.
That's a bummer.
It's depressing to think about. So we just don't think about it much. But yeah, it's it. But again, you can't blame them, and they're picking up the pieces, and they're moving forward. And I'm sure.
There's so much talent still out there in the independent market. I mean, it's not like, you know, that's the only name you could build a company around.
Yeah, and EC3 and Austin are...
Those are big names.
They're big names, and they're not dumb people. I mean, it drives me nuts to see the things that people will write, like that poster I was showing you off Facebook, and people will be like, oh, well, EC3 can't carry his bags alone, let alone company. And I'm like, you're such a hater. You should listen to my podcast and get a positive look, because... If you knew how nice he is of a human being and how talented and smart he is, I learn more. It's kind of like, have you ever had the pleasure of talking? I call him Uncle Rip, but Rip Rogers. Have you ever talked to Rip Rogers?
Mm-mm.
If you get a chance, if it's being a wrestling fan, it's worth your time. I'd say he's probably one of the top people to talk to about wrestling. I've learned more in 5 minutes of talking to Rip than I have like from trainers after training with him for weeks. EC3 Austin... They kind of have that similar thing where it's like you could be go 20 minutes in front of them and do this, and they'll be like, yeah, and this was the positive, and here's the negatives, and it's things you may not even think of because they're good, you know. And Austin, technically wrestling, I mean, it's very, very good, and psychologically they're both on point. But Rip Rogers, he's one of those guys where literally. Santino Morales was doing a talk seminar before Heroes and Legends that I was at, and he was like, hey, if anyone here can learn from one person, I recommend Rip Rogers. If that tells you anything, Santino Morales said that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an endorsement.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to go to a seminar he had at Supreme Wrestling in Madison, Indiana, and Rip was there, and like I said, I learned so much in such a short period of time of just him talking.
Yeah.
And if you look at my matches from before... from before he was, I met him and talked to him and learned from him, to now, my matches were, not that they're 5-star now by any means, but they're significantly improved with the psychology and the storytelling, and it's not just a, you do this and I do this, and you know, we get the shine and the heat and the cutoff, and I start everything with, what story are we telling? What story do you want to tell? And there was a match I actually had at Ring Wars Carolina, which they've actually merged with Control Your Narrative. It seems to be like an OVW WWE situation like 20 years ago. And this guy's a G-Money, a great guy, great wrestler, great person. He's a DJ in real life, and that's his gimmick. So we told a whole story in like an 8-minute match of me basically being DNA, the mercenary, the assassin, ruining his DJ arm. I worked his shoulder the whole match and would mock him. Like, oh, well, you just can't do his DJ thing. I'm like holding my hand up to my ear and like acting like I'm spinning a record. And the crowd was so into it. The one big bump in that match was him giving me a big discus lariat for the finish. And cleaned my clock, and it looked like $1 million. And that crowd erupted, and so many people came to us in the back and were like, that was my favorite match of the night. And fans were like, that's my favorite match of the night. And G looks at me, he's like, we didn't do anything. I said, no, but we told a great story. And that's what Rip beats home to people, is tell a story. He goes, yeah. He's like, and David Barnabas Spector says it great, too. He's like, think of fireworks. Go to a fireworks show, right? first firework, ooh, you know, second firework, Then by about 10 minutes, you're like, yeah, I think I've seen this. That's
when they bring out the big guns.
Yeah, right, and it's a boom, boom, boom piece. But that's spot wrestling without telling a story. Is think about, you know, a moonsault, an Inzi, this, spot. Cool. If the second match is spot, you're like, okay, uh-huh. Third match, fourth. Then you're
you've got to have ebb and flow.
Right. So then, but then you can get in there and be like, hey, there's a story. There's stakes. You know, I'm going to ruin, when I went there, everyone was looking at that story with me and G-Money, and it was basically, I'm ruining his livelihood. Can you imagine someone so mean and so diabolical? He's not just beating him. He's going to ruin his struggle that he spends...
60 seconds of quiet, please!
That he spends, you know, records with. He's going to ruin his livelihood. Like, that's a story.
I'm back here at the Wrestle Center. I can't believe they suspended me for 3 weeks for no reason. I'm sick of what's going on around here. But you know what? We've got that trio tournament against Derek, the wannabe king. And we got what is it? Ray Ray, the turncoat Ray Ray? And we got that bimbo announcer? I can't believe they even let her get her wrestling. What's wrong with them? But you know what? I ain't worried. We're not worried because I got the best Hollywood clip.
Best.
Do you understand? The best. I've got the one and only Colton Cage right here. I have the one and DDT. And not only that, look at this right here. This is the man right here. Do you understand what I'm talking about? I love this man, Van Vicious. But you know what? We're going to take you three, and we're going to demolish you. Do you understand me? We're going to demolish you. And I just want to say, always remember, the Hollywood clique, you dream it, we always live it. Do you understand that? Always.
Oh, it's the video, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, stop a little. Okay.
All right. Word of mercy. Well, it looks like they're going to be recording for a bit.
Yeah, I know,
so
right?
Should we cut it off, I guess?
You've already talked to me once. I'm sure you want to talk to some other people around here, too.
You know what? I can't believe I'm back here at the Wrestle Center. I can't believe I've been here for 3 weeks. 3 weeks! But you know what? We got that trio tournament coming up against Derek, the wannabe king. You got that turncoat Ray Ray.
Better be ready.
And you got that bimbo announcer. I'm glad you slapped her taste out of her mouth. You understand me? But you know what? I can't wait. Because this trio tournament, I've got the best. Do you understand? I've got the best. I got Colton Cage. Look at that face, baby. Look at DDT, the most beautiful woman right here. And look at this body, baby, Van Vicious. And I promise you, we're going to demolish anybody that gets in our way. Anybody.
It's kind of funny because I'm from New England originally, and it's wrestling up there. And the further south I go, it becomes more wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, especially Hollywood Jimmy is from the old school Memphis approach. Yes.
Wrestling. Cracks me up. I'm sure you want to talk to other people. You've talked to me before. But the only end note I was saying is like, yeah, this is something so diabolical that, you know, we're told a story of, not only am I beating him, but I'm taking away his livelihood and the way he supports his family. And it's told a really great story. And he won in the end, you know. And I think there's a lot to be told about storytelling. That's why we go to movies and read books and stuff to this day. Even play video games. Look at the stories in video games. People want a good story, you know. They want to be involved in a good story.
Do you find any difficulty, like, bouncing between characters? Are there similarities between Maurice the Strong and DNA, or is it, like, a completely different mindset when you approach those two characters?
It's actually a very different mindset. Maurice is an old-school strongman, so there's a lot of old-school strong techniques, test of strength, the claw on the head, manhandling people like that. DNA, I try to approach more like a... you ever seen like Riddick from the Riddick movies? How he kind of moves like a panther,
yeah,
and stuff. And I just say he's the rogue gun. I never say what he is. Is he assassin? Is he a mercenary? Is he a hitman? I mean, you don't really know. But I move in there like I'm literally taking you out, and hence the rogue gun. And I think that's like you're a target and I'm eliminating the target. So it's very different. Even my mannerisms are very different. Like, you know, Maurice can actually be kind of fun. Like the circus gimmick itself can be, we can be kind of as goofy as we want. And we can be as serious as we want because it's a circus, you know. And I'll say things, you know, laissez les pommes d'en brûler, you know, and scream it and get a big pop because he's French. And, you know, it's like, let the good times roll, you know, and versus
you
DNA.
You do a French accent for Maurice?
I do a French accent.
Let's hear a little French accent.
I'd be like, like. Either of you, you must cheer me because I am Maurice the Strong. Nothing hurts me. I am Maurice. That's better when I scream it, but you know, we can't do it because we got promos going on right now.
Yeah.
But
well, Dustin.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me on the show, man.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure.
That's the show. Thank you to The Gun Show, Brett Michaels. Thank you to Dustin Heath. Thank you to Memphis Wrestling. And most importantly, thank you for listening. Our opening theme is Arthur with two H's. Our closing theme is Joey Pegram of Shabadoo. And for music, news, episode archives, and other fine podcasts, visit backtothelight.net. Until next time, take care, y'all. Part of the Back to the Light podcast network at backtothelight.net.